and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Trash Tapes. One man's trash is another man's treasure. My name is Johan Chapol, your host and guide through the world of terrible cinema, reporting live once again from my pandemic bunker on this very hot June day to give you all a little disclaimer. This episode was one of the hardest to edit and one that I'm not entirely proud of. Now, it's not because it wasn't funny or doesn't have moments of insight, but the sheer frustration and incoherence of this review, well, we can call it that. The film Ed and I reviewed somehow got to me, causing moments of immaturity, unprofessionalism, and just sheer rage. It was horrible to hear what sounds like a mental breakdown as I edited. It failed as a review, and it failed as a representation of myself as a character. It basically sucked. It allowed me to have a long, hard look at myself and reflect on how this strange time has affected me, and I need a little time away to regroup. It was obvious that my mental state has not been in the best place because of current events and isolation. It allowed me to be reflective. I feel like everyone needs a little opportunity to do that once in a while. But now that the lockdown is slowly easing in this country and the new normal is starting to form, as well as having now more free time from work and projects, it was time for me to go back to this episode and approach it differently, focusing on the humour and the over-top nature of the film and the reactions that we got. Once completed, I felt like it was the best I could salvage from what was already an infuriatingly long episode. This is the reason why this episode took a lot longer to come out than usual. So I want to apologize for this review not being as clear or as professional as other episodes, for not reaching that high standard that I feel like we're starting to strive into. And I also want to apologize in advance for my behavior. And for how I reacted and approached this film with this sense of vitriol. And I hope to approach future episodes with less bitterness and more open-mindedness. So what was this movie that caused all this in the first place? That would be Richard Kelly's Southland Tales. Please enjoy.
Ready when you are, champ.
Okay. Oh, no, you might say that. It's fine. You can call me champ. But really, I'm a pimp. So, I'm a pimp.
That's going in the pre-title. It's got to. It has to go in there.
I'm a pimp. Right. Complete out of context. Anyway, okay.
You are about to experience trash cinema. Oh my God.
Hey,
everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Trash Tapes, where one man's trash is another man's treasure. I am your host, Johan Chapul, and the Inflictor of Pain, and I am joined by my victim and DJ, Edward Harvey. How are you doing?
I am wonderful, considering this weird situation. Yeah.
How are we handling things? We're doing all right? Because we're now like on, I don't know, week 1,000 of being in our isolation stations.
Yeah, I've kind of, well, it's weird. I've kind of like gone back to work with my day job and stuff, and it's a strange situation, but it's like, I'm kind of getting used to it, even though it's weird. It's like, you have to just get on with it, don't you?
Yeah, you have to. Because currently at the minute, this has now been, what, week 8-ish now of being isolated at home. And oddly enough, I've just got more hobbies. Amazon's my friend now. I bought so much shit.
Yeah,
So it's as if I'm waiting the moment I'm allowed out of my house. I'm going to have people come in and go, come and behold wonders. Come and see all my wares. I feel like that's going to be the case. But to be honest... Nothing that we've been doing in our isolation stations can even compare to the weirdness that of the movie we're about to talk about today.
Totally.
Now, I suggested this movie to you because it's always been in the back of my head, and it's because recently I've been watching a few things from this director, and I'm thinking, okay, I need to share this with you because this I don't know if enough people are talking about it. But then I saw it. This movie was available on Mubi, of all things. You know Mubi, the art house, arty streaming service?
Yeah.
The one that's all for higher-class movies. Then this piece of trash came on, and I said, okay, right, well, we got to have to watch this.
It seems like the movie wants to be like an arty movie. It's like trying to be, but then it's trying to be a comedy as well. It's like, I don't know what it wants to be.
Exactly, and that is what's the wonder of the movie we're going to review today, Southland Tales. Grief.
I'm going to tell you the story of the journey down the road not taken. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. Sordid tales of how it all came crashing down.
This is an epic Los Angeles crime saga.
And you're researching your role?
Yes, it takes place in the near future.
Scientists are saying the future is going to be far more futuristic than they originally predicted.
You're gonna have to wear a bulletproof vest.
Let's talk about your phone. What's it really about?
Don't look so scared, Mr. Santeros. The future is just like you imagine.
Someone must be hiding it.
It's like the nervous breakdown of the century.
Nothing that a killer, a porn star, and a tattoo parlor can't handle.
It is time for a surgical strike.
And pimps don't commit suicide. It all ends tonight.
It had to be this way.
A lot less violence in the world if everyone just got a little more cardio.
Right, Southland Tales Southland Tales to me personally is something that is both a wonder and a car wreck. It is something that is confusing and nonsensical to something trying to be way too over the top and pretentious. It's a lot going on at the minute, and I kind of knew we had to talk about it.
You know what the way I kind of summarize it is the fact, you know, like when you, if, because we're both like filmmakers, you know, when you start making films and you kind of like just want to put everything into a film, you know,
yes.
And it's like that, but with a really big budget. It seems, because it's like when you first start making films, your genres and stuff are all over the place, and you kind of like, I want a bit of that, I want a bit of that, and I want to put like loads of like licensed music in it that I can't actually put on my film. But obviously he could because he had the money. But like when you're making a film, you put like loads of like tracks in that you wouldn't normally be able to have in a film.
Just like... So, yeah, it's like, I'm going to put all this in. And it's like, oh, and he's talking about, oh, who do I want to have? Oh, I want The Rock. Yeah, let's get The Rock. Or, oh, let's get this. If this movie feels like a kid in a candy store who's able to get everything but ate too much candy and is now sick. And he's overloaded himself.
So it's like, yeah, it's like a rich kid has been able to make a film, because they can actually, they've got the funds to just do anything they want.
But the weird thing is, the way this movie was done and made, it's not technically a rich kid. So I'm going to explain what this is. Okay. So Southland Tales is a 2006 science fiction comedy thriller, and is the second film by writer and director Richard Kelly. Now, if anyone is aware of that name, he is the director of the indie-tastic and one of the great films of the late 90s, early noughties, Donnie Darko. So
I love that film.
Everyone loves that film to some capacity. You know, there's the original version and there's director's cut. There's people argue that the original cut's always better than the director's. But Richard Kelly got his first film made this big cult hit. Right. Mm. It didn't do very well in the box office, but it did really well on circulation.
Popular pie plant pictured here.
The title refers, the title refers, Southland Tales refers to the name used by the locals when it's talking about Southern California.
Yeah.
So basically it's about, the movie itself is basically all based in Southern California. The movie is set in the then near future of 2008. All right.
Okay.
So this is basically almost like a branch of alternative history. Mm. So it's like a what if scenario, right? The movie basically falling into, and the film's a portrait of LA, which it claims, this is what it says on the description, that it is a satirical commentary on the military industrial complex and the infotainment industry, with an ensemble cast of literally everyone under the sun and more, all trying to make some coherent sense of this movie.
Yeah.
So, my goodness. First of all, I want to say that there is a humongous cast in this film.
Oh, definitely. There's someone you recognize in most scenes, like, even if they're not the main character, you know. It's just like, there's people cropping up all over there. Like, I like the poltergeist lady. What's her name? I can't remember her name, but
that was a weird choice when I first saw her. So she appears out of nowhere, being one of the many minions of the fluid karma company.
Yeah.
And just seeing her say some of these lines, like, is ridiculous.
It's random. Crazy.
So you have that, but then you also got the big stars. But what's interesting, and I think this is what Richard Kelly was purposely trying to do here, was trying to have these actors play off type. So you had Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who is an actor. He's an actor who has political ties to the Republican Party, who gets amnesia. Okay, and then in that crazy haze, writes a screenplay called The Power that happens to be almost a Notre Dame's prediction of the future.
Yeah, it's crazy. I've got a clip of Boxer talking about his screenplay.
Please.
The basic concept is this. I play an LAPD cop who isn't who he seems. He's a paranoid schizophrenic who has a supernatural gift. He sees things. And he senses a change.
Crime suddenly skyrockets for no apparent reason. The world is coming to an end. He's the only one who can see the truth.
That sounds to me more like Richard Kelly pitching the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean that clip does go on, but I'll stop it there. Some of my clips are quite long.
They will be, because this movie is filled with ridiculously over the top monologues. Let's look at the rest of them. So first of all, we're going through Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So he's the amnesiac actor, but the whole point is that while he's having amnesia, he has all these almost childlike like tics, like being very timid.
Yeah, I found that really jarring, like off-putting, because he's playing this like strong kind of character, like The Rock, and then all of a sudden, when something scary happens, he goes to like reverts to like a really sort of weird kind of child, doesn't he? He puts his hands up like this,
puts his hands together, and
it looks like an awkward direction that he's been given. Like he's not naturally doesn't want to do that. Like
it feels forced every time.
Every time something dangerous happens, do this. So he's been told, directed that way, and it doesn't kind of fit with the rest of what he's doing.
It feels forced.
Yeah.
And I think, and oddly enough, I feel like a lot of these actors are acting in a way that feels forced. And I'm not sure whether it's part of the satire or not. This is the weird situation. So, other people in there. Sean William Scott is playing what seems to be the hard man in this movie.
Yeah.
So Sean William Scott, a.k.a. Stifler, from, you know, American Pie and shit, is the hard man in this movie.
He's like the strong silent type, isn't he? He's very quietly spoken, but yeah, he's like, he is the hard man, yeah, like the hero kind of thing.
Yeah, but here's the thing, he doesn't just play one hard man, he plays two hard men, which we won't explain what happens in that bit until later on, because we're gonna, our goal for this podcast is to try and break the Rubik's Cube that is this plot. And figure out what's happening there. Then you got Sarah Michelle Gellar, who plays Christy Now, I believe it is.
Yeah, that's the name. Yeah,
Christy Now.
She was a porn star, wasn't she?
She was a porn star who's now an online influencer who has a reality TV show that talks about politics with other bimbo porn stars.
I've got a clip.
I'm Krista Now. And we are here live in Malibu with my guests today, Shoshana Cox, Sheena G, and Dina Storm. Join us for an in-depth discussion of the penetrating issues facing society today.
Penetrating.
Abortion, terrorism, crime, poverty, social reform, quantum teleportation, teen horniness.
Quantum teleportation?
I love the last two, teen horniness and war.
like they're both good conversations to have right next to each other, you know what I mean? Oh, it's brilliant. So yeah, so she's that, but it ends up being a lot deeper. Turns out that she may be manipulated by the left wing, and oh, let's not even get started. You then got other people as well. You've got like Wallace Shawn, you've got Miranda Richardson, you've got Mandy Moore, you've got Justin Timberlake, who is not really, oddly enough, he seems to be the narrator. But I don't know if he's really central to the movie, but he's just there.
Yeah, it seems really weird that he's narrating the movie. And I found it annoying. You know, like, I don't know. His character is really, like, annoying to me. I don't know why.
I think it's annoying for the fact that there's no reason for him to really be there other than to remind people that he survived the war.
Yeah.
That's literally all he's there for. And to also sing a musical number, which we will get to. Oh boy, we will get to that.
That is a proper music video moment, isn't it?
It is. It's just a music video, but oh God,
it's difficult not to just get to those points straight away, like jump right to him, because it's just like it's just in your mind, isn't it?
Basically, the movie is this really bizarre mashup of multiple genres. It's considered to be a science fiction. It's considered to be a comedy. It's considered to be a thriller. It's considered to be a political satire. It's considered to be a farce. It's considered to be just a commentary. It's everything. It's everything, but also at the same time, it's absolutely nothing, because it doesn't pick one.
No.
If it picked one, we could go along with it, but But even if the movie doesn't, so how am I supposed to know? There's quite a few interesting facts about this movie.
Okay.
Which you can totally imagine. So, very first thing, basically, is I've got one of the best things, one of the best sources for this one. Vice did a really good article on talking to Richard Kelly about Southland Tales. So if anyone wants to look at it in deeper, you should totally have a read of that. It's fantastic. He came up with the idea for this, for the film, before September 11th. So before the 9/11 attacks.
Right.
The original script was involving something very much more crime thriller. Kind of like what the Dwayne The Rock Johnson was pitching.
Yeah.
But that was the original pitch, right? So it involved blackmail, porn star, two cops. One cop was gonna have schizophrenia, and so it was basically gonna be like a crime drama. But then after the attacks, Kelly revised the script. He said, and I quote: "The original script was more about making fun of Hollywood, but now it's about, I hope, creating a piece of science fiction that's about a real important problem we're facing, about civil liberties and homeland security, and need to sustain both those things and balance them." Right.
Yeah.
So suddenly, this movie that wasn't going to be political at all, he tried to really hammer in this sort of political satire.
Yeah.
Like he was really trying to hammer it in.
Yeah, because you've got security guards with like sniper rifles and stuff.
Yeah, and Justin Timberlake, who by the looks of things, he's just keeping an eye on a pier or something, is on a turret.
Yeah, like a massive sniper turret.
It's ridiculous. That's security? Scary.
Yeah.
It's fucking terrifying. He goes on to say he describes the film as a tapestry of ideas all related to some of the biggest issues that I think we're facing right now. Alternative fuel, or the increasing obsession with celebrity, or how celebrity now intertwines with politics. He says basically that with the film's premise being a nuclear attack on Texas, which is what sparks the whole alternate future, Kelly wanted to take a look at how the United States would have responded and would respond to something like this, and while constructing a, and I air quotes, great black comedy.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Can I just say, I kind of hate it when directors who... Although this was said during the whole thing, and I think around that time. But I hate when directors do make a piece of rubbish, right? And they backtrack themselves and say it was always meant to be a comedy.
Yeah, like Tommy Wiseau with The Room and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like he's doing a little bit here. I think he's trying to put all his eggs into one basket, and it just didn't work. I don't believe his bull in the slightest.
No, I mean, this is what happens when your original idea is so different to what it ended up being. It's like, I'll have a serious movie idea, and then I'll transform it into a comedy, and it's never going to work.
I mean, some great comedies are movies that don't make you laugh that much, but there are moments of pure comedy gold and it works. There's a story behind it. But I feel like with Southland Tales, there's no story here. Or if there is, there's a lot. And I'm going to explain a little bit more, and I'm going to show you a little something that I did here. He did say, though, after all this, that the whole experience making the movie was a little bit complicated. Basically, the studio... After the sort of cult rise of Donnie Darko, which has slowly gotten, like, over the years, it's now become a beloved movie, that film, really,
oh, definitely.
Right? But this is smelling so much of, like, you make a great first album, now is your time to do the second album, and this is where it flops.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not always going to be... I mean, like, you have, like... People like M. Night made these for early movies, like, were awesome, and then all of a sudden he couldn't kind of keep that going. But
yeah, and same goes, oddly enough, some we've already talked about, John Borman, aka Zardoz, because he made Deliverance first, and then he goes off and makes Zardoz, and then he goes and makes Exorcist 2, The Heretic. So I feel like, is Richard Kelly the modern equivalent of a John Borman?
Yeah, probably, but yeah, it sounds that way, doesn't it?
I mean, is this generation Zardoz?
Yeah. Although Zardoz was like, it was trying to be sincere throughout. It wasn't trying to be funny at all. Where this, you can tell there is some obvious kind of comedy in this.
Yeah, and but that's a weird thing. Some of it works and some of it falls very, very flat. Since it didn't do very well, Donnie Darko in cinemas, he thought like, oh, that's it. That was a flash in his pan. But ever since, selling a couple of scripts and then then suddenly becoming a cult hit, Donnie Darko, he was given the opportunity to make this movie.
Yeah.
So I said, look, I've got this really ambitious film. And people were, and everyone and their grandmother were excited at the time because obviously is Richard Kelly. This is the moment where it's like, he is this new up-and-coming sensation. If you've seen Donnie Darko, you're going to... Everyone and their grandmother wanted to get involved in this movie.
Yeah. Well, you can kind of see that because it was very, very sort of different, wasn't it? A very, very striking movie that came out of nowhere and it's like, ooh, this is good. I want to work with this guy.
He basically said, Richard Kelly said that the film's biggest influence, while he was writing it, the biggest influences were the following. And I want to see if you can recognize it, because I definitely can. 1955's Kiss Me Deadly, which I can sort of sense as well. Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
I can definitely feel Pulp Fiction by having the multiple storylines running through. The structure of it's very Pulp Fiction. Brazil.
Yeah.
Which is that weird sort of like dystopian idea of corporatism, stuff like that. And Dr. Strangelove.
All right, yeah. Yeah.
And you could kind of see all that. But I think the problem with it is like, and this is something we're going to tackle on in a bit. This whole movie feels like Richard Kelly's favorite things, the movie.
Yeah, it's like a pick and mix.
Like, exactly, it's a pick and mix. You're grabbing all the bits together, but it's still not going to make a good collection of stuff.
Yeah, or like an all-you-can-eat buffet kind of thing. Like, give it the wrong, take the wrong person to a buffet, and they'll just put like a scoop of ice cream on a salad.
Yes. That should be a thing. This movie is a scoop of ice cream on a crispy Caesar salad.
That's actually a quote from Jerry Seinfeld. Like he said that on a stand-up show.
But you know what? He's summed up this movie goddamn perfectly. The studio got a little nervous. So he says, okay, so the movie, he said like, all right, how much? So he said like the movie really should have cost something like $50 million. And we should have had, and it should have been like this amount of time to film. The studio only gave him 1 month to film that entire movie and $17 million. So he was already feeling restricted.
Mm.
So not only could he not do his big dream, on top of that, he was restricted to a time limit and restricted to amount of pay that he couldn't really pull off. To the point that actually everything with Justin Timberlake was shot in a day.
You can definitely tell that.
He never leaves the one place, doesn't he?
No. Well, actually, he's in a few different places. Like, but I can see that it wouldn't have taken long to do his footage.
Yeah, it's just Timmy. Oh, we're gone for a day. Excellent. Which again shows how irrelevant his role is, because it was able just to be done in a day, barely interact with everybody else, and that's it.
Yeah, you kind of have the illusion that he's in the movie a lot because of the narration. Because he's like, he's heard more than he's seen.
Yes, he's just heard. So you think you're like, oh, so he's the thing that glues everyone together. But it's like, he's never met any of these people.
Yeah.
Unless he's just doing it from the sniper rifle that he's stalking down.
Yeah. I guess that choice may have been because Justin Timberlake was absolutely massive at this particular point, wasn't he?
Yeah, so like he's huge. It's like, oh, you know how great it would have Justin Timberlake in your movie? Yeah, totally. apparently, though, Justin Timberlake most of Justin Timberlake's lines were dubbed because, according to Richard Kelly, he said he misdirected Justin and made him too sarcastic at the time.
Ah, okay.
Which might explain the voiceover, but the thing with the voiceover is he sounds so tired.
Yeah. It's a bit like like Harrison Ford in Blade Runner, when he did that unnecessary version with the narration, and he's like, he hated it, so he just did a really lazy performance. Apparently, when he's been questioned about that, he says, "No, I did a normal performance. It was fine.
There were loads of like little troubles on the shoot, but they eventually it did get done. He did say that he still says sort of to this day that that entire experience he was incredibly proud of. He still says that he's very proud of it. But he also kind of learned at the end of the day that he was young. He was 29. He was too young to direct a film this ambitious. And you know what? I'm glad he's at least admitted that.
Yeah. Do you know what it reminds me of in terms of that whole scenario? David Lynch with Dune.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah, I'm doing a video on that soon, so like I've been looking at that. But he was obviously given this massive production, like this movie to do, and he didn't really have much control. And it's like it's so much money, and he was young, and it's like it's echoing this situation, isn't it? Like it's definitely similar.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like because before he did Dune, he did what? He did The Elephant Man, didn't he?
Yeah, and Eraserhead. So.
And that's it. That's about it in terms of major movies. So, Eraserhead. So to think that he did Eraserhead, and then to do The Elephant Man, and then say, "Oh, you would be perfect for Dune."
Yeah. You know what though? We're going a bit off, like off topic here, but we're still kind of there.
No, it's still there.
And it is basically he turned down Return of the Jedi to do Dune.
How can I just say though, how awesome and weird would have that Return of the Jedi by David Lynch would have been?
Yeah.
Like I would have dreamed that would be awesome.
Want to lose weight and keep eating?
This is the thing that everyone remembers Southland Tales for. So Kelly sent the organizers of the 2006 Cannes Film Festival a rough cut of Southland Tales on a DVD, assuming that it wouldn't be accepted. Right. So he just pushed it in a rough cut. Right. Much to his surprise, the Cannes Film Festival loved it and wanted the film entered into the competition for the Palme d'Or, right?
Okay.
This is the rough cut, right? So he stopped editing the film because he was busy trying to do other things after this. He was moving on to his next project as well. But which means also that he wasn't able actually to finish off quite a few visual shots.
Yeah.
So this movie was very much incomplete. This version of the film was 160 minutes. So it was close to 3 hours.
Oh my God.
Which actually means we got a movie, the version we got to see was about 45 minutes less. It was 2 hours, 15 minutes. So another 45 minutes of this, right?
I thought it was longer. I thought it was over two. I think it was about 2 hours, 30 something.
Nah, it was only 2 hours 15, but it felt long to me.
Yeah. It felt, I was clock watching. I was looking at the timer all the time thinking, how long is this going on for?
And did you look at the clock and thinking, are you sitting there going, how is this only 15 minutes? I feel like I've been here a lifetime. So the movie was so critically panned at Cannes, right, that people were booing the screening, people were walking out, people called it the most atrocious major screening by any director in the history of Cannes. It was horribly booed. Kelly describes the negative reaction to Cannes as being a very painful experience on a lot of levels. And ultimately, he felt the film was better because of it, because it forced him to do cuts and to reevaluate the movie.
Yeah.
Even then, though, it makes me curious what the other 45 minutes were.
Oh, God knows. I don't know. Maybe more like sort of cars fucking.
Maybe more cars fucking. Maybe another musical number. I don't know. Oh, we've got to get to the car fucking.
This is gonna keep like we keep sort of saying spoilers of like the plot, don't we? Because it's just like...
But it's so random. It's so random.
Just can't help talking
it's
about
so...
it.
I just want to scream at this movie and say coherency is a thing. Anyway, all right. Oh, let me breathe. Oh, I'm getting angry. Okay, falling deep into the rabbit hole. You have to stop me if I ever fall too deep into the rabbit hole. It's like a hot. I feel like one of those weird conspiracy theory nuts, the ones you find on YouTube, and you kind of say, "Well, everyone's a lizard person." I feel like this right now talking about this movie.
I am the lizard king. I can do anything. It's like fucking Jim Morrison.
Yes. God, this episode's going to be interesting to edit because yeah. I'm getting very deep.
It fits in with how the movie is. You know, yeah. If it is like all over the place, it doesn't matter because that's how the movie is.
He ended up cutting 45 minutes of the film, right? So Kelly basically edited it down, right, to the basic plot lines that were involving Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and Scott, right? William Scott. The director also demanded to keep the musical number with Justin Timberlake in because he felt, and I'm not joking, he says he felt it was the heart and soul movie.
Excellent.
Well, be honest, that's that whole little sequence, that musical number, let's talk about musical number for a minute, because I feel as if this is probably the scene that everyone has seen, even in or out of context. So Justin Timberlake is a soldier who's come back from the Texan-Iran-Iraq war, because the whole point is that terrorists that came in blew up a nuclear bomb in Texas, and so America's now fighting everybody. He's fighting Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, North Korea, everyone. So he's one of those soldiers that sort of survived there. He had a horrible time. He was shipped back due to some kind of situation, and now he's a security guard on a beach in California with the most amazing over-the-top sniper rifle ever, like we mentioned. He's also randomly a drug dealer, because okay.
Do you bleed?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, it's so ridiculous. Because this is also, Justin Timberlake's looking, he's trying really hard to be a hard man, but it's weird with his tiny, weird afro curls.
Yeah, his natural voice isn't like that at all, so he's really trying his best to put it on, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he's really trying hard. So at this point, he's trying to be like, I'm trying to be grizzled. I'm trying to be hard. But at the same time, all you're hearing, it's gotta be me! You're just hearing...
Yeah, see, this is fucking Mr. NSYNC, you know.
Yes! It doesn't match. And I understand what Richard Kelly was trying to do. Maybe get some undiscovered talent. But I get that sometimes some actors get pigeonholed into certain roles. But sometimes it's because they're good at it. Or sometimes it's because they're too green to be in a role like this. And that's what I believe the Timberlake thing is. Yeah. So Timberlake is selling a drug of some sort that you inject into your neck and it makes you feel euphoric, kind of like heroin, but maybe not.
I've got a clip of him describing it, so let's play that.
Let's get down to business.
What is it?
Straight up fluid karma. I mean, me and my boy's been smuggling this shit out of Utopia. Look, green, you dream.
Blue, dream.
In an hour, you feel new. And you can forget that about music mellow comes yellow in,
it sounds really inappropriate.
I know, right?
I'm giving you blood red. Bleed? I said, do you bleed?
Yeah, dog.
Yeah, dog. You talk to God.
This bit is amazing. Listen.
Not even seeing him. You hear his voice, and you see his disciples. They appear like angels under a sea of black umbrellas. Angels can see through time.
I mean, it sounds poetic and beautiful, but it's totally out of place. Why is that in the movie?
It also means, like, it's also, this is another problem with the movie as a whole. It's like, he's quoting, like, literature, and the whole movie in general, like, the lines quoted directly from song lyrics, from literature, from other movies, and other things like that. But you're sitting there thinking, this is so out of place. And also things like angels with black umbrellas. And he's thinking, what does that even mean? What's the context of saying that?
It's like going back to when I was saying about like an early filmmaker's project, and you kind of try and be all poetic in your dialogue and stuff.
Yeah. And this is where we're talking about it, because once he describes a drug, he injects the drug onto himself, he passes out, he then wakes up randomly, and then all these things that are done by the killers plays, and a music video turns up. Just a music video turns up.
Yeah.
With Justin Timberlake singing, "I got soul, but I'm not a soldier." And I can't, again, but that is so, like, so on the nose. I get it. I get it, Richard Kelly. I get it. I'm getting so mad.
And
sorry.
It's a long piece. This is like, obviously knowing about music licensing and stuff. There's loads of like long sections of songs which would be so expensive to have like really big songs of the time. Like we've got Muse in there at some point as well, and we've got like the Killers, like you've just mentioned, and it's just like the whole song pretty much.
It's pretty much the whole song being played. With Justin Timberlake's got blood all over his shirt. He is walking down. He's walking down this arcade that's also kind of a nightclub for the security guards, soldiers that are keeping and manning the beaches. And then suddenly, some sexy nurses turn up. All of them are introduced by, you know that ball machine, the one that you roll the thing up? Like, they're all lying down there doing the can-can.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay. And then they're all getting provocative, and they're going around, and they're doing the can-can stuff, and they're doing it all over these arcades, and it's smoke appears out of nowhere. It becomes a full, it's just a music video by this point.
Yeah, it just like a Justin Timberlake music video by that point. He's just reverting to his Justin Timberlake persona at that point, isn't he? Like.
And you know what? If as a music video, it would have been awesome. As a single 4-minute music video that you'd see on MTV, people say, "Have you seen that new Justin Timberlake music video? It looks cool." Yeah, it looks cool. Not in the middle of my goddamn movie.
Yeah, it's the only like sort of bit of thinking, oh, that's pretty good actually.
That bit is great, but the problem with that is that it makes dong dilly dung dang sense. In context, because again, he seems to have the drug. The drug makes him want to sing a song. He has a musical number, and then it just ends.
Yeah,
there's no context to it. It just ends, and it moves on to the next scene.
But it just seems to do that a lot, though, doesn't it? It should show you something, then moves on.
It continues on saying that the editorial changes that were made to restructure the order of the film's scenes include re-recording Justin Timberlake's voiceover, as we mentioned, and director had to add 90 new visual effects shots in order to remove about 30 to 35 minutes of footage from the initial cut. So, yes, the film got smaller, but now there's more visual effects to blend everything together.
Yeah. Talking of visual effects, let's just talk about that car bit. Can we talk about that now? Or
let's talk about the car.
The thing is, though, with this podcast, we don't necessarily have to go in sequence because the movie doesn't go in like a sequence. I think we can go all over the place with our podcast.
And you know what? With this episode, you know what? Yeah, fuck it. We're just going to say things as we go. So go on.
So we're showed this is like showcase of like a new commercial. And it's kind of like, it looks like PlayStation graphics, doesn't it, for a start?
Oh, my God.
Of like a car, like sort of pulling into like a car park. But then it goes behind another car, like starts to mount on it, which reminded me of that Aerosmith album, Pump.
Yeah.
And basically so the car is then fucking another car. And it just
literally in the exhaust.
And then you just get this bit of voiceover.
The 2008 Trier Solitaire. Coming soon.
Boo! Boo!
Coming soon.
And you know what? There was some bits of this movie that didn't make me laugh. That was more like a scratching my head moment. But the response from the CEO of one of the companies... what's that supposed to be an advert for? And then the other guy behind him said, "Oh, don't worry, that's just the European cut."
I think he actually says, "Did we just see two cars fucking?"
Yes. He's like, "Did we just see two cars fucking?" Is it? Oh, I assume that's just the European cats.
Which is actually a funny joke because European adverts are a bit like that in a weird way, aren't they?
Yeah, the whole American idea that some European, like, you know, like the French one, sometimes tits are out or something for no reason. I think that's what they were jumping on. There's still more problems with the movie. So in other words, Southland Tales was initially planned. Now, here's something I want to ask. So do you notice that the movie was done in chapters?
Yeah.
What chapter did it start on?
I can't remember. It starts
on chapter 4. Do you know why?
Okay, no, I don't know why.
Okay. Because originally Southland Tales was planned to be a 9-part interactive experience.
What?
I've got to add this. What? Yes!
That's appropriate. I've actually used it.
So, the first 6 parts would have been published over 6 graphic novels, okay, and would have been released in a 6-month period leading up to the movie. The feature then would have comprised of the final 3 parts of the experience, and then there was going to be a website that was developed to intertwine the graphic novels and the movie to put it together. The idea of then this 6-part graphic novel then got narrowed down to 3.
Yeah.
And then the novels were written by Richard Kelly and so on and so forth. And he found it difficult as it pushed him to the edge of his own sanity, as he remarked once in an interview. In other words, In order for you to understand the movie, you need to have read the 3-part graphic novel prequel and be involved in a website that no longer exists.
Yeah. That's going back to Dune again. That's similar to Dune. You have to really read the books to understand what's going on in the movie.
Yeah. Do you know what's a weird thing as well? This whole thing reminds me of, like, The Matrix. Do you remember when The Matrix series came out?
Yeah.
And you had the Animatrix, you had the video game, you had all this stuff, and if you played everything, you got little extra tidbits of, like, the big lore, right? Yeah. But when have there ever been a film where you have to read something before going into a movie to find out what happens next?
That's never happened. It's just too ambitious, isn't it, to have that? That's just ridiculous.
Now, and guess what? I read them.
All right.
I read them. For you guys, by the way, I've read this steaming pile of what the fuckery. Right?
Did it help?
A little, but I'll tell you what I mean by that. It helped a little, just like putting on a single sock helps your foot get warm. You know, it's like, it's not really useful in the grand scheme of things.
But you're halfway there.
I'm halfway there. I'm just halfway there into putting on my shoe. You know, it's just, it's ridiculous. So what I read was basically it did add more context to things. It filled in some of the gaps that the movie was trying to set up, especially involving the fluid karma, involving it explains a lot more with the left. It explains a lot more with what Dwayne the Rock Johnson has had, and also explains a bit more about how we got the amnesia.
Yeah.
But and stuff like that, and it's fascinating, and it explains a little bit more like how did certain people get to certain places, and it pushes some of the motivations. But it still didn't make the whole thing clear to me. But still, something just brought more questions up, or it made me think, well, actually, why wasn't this brought up in the movie? Or why is this a thing? And it just turns out, I think, basically, this is too big. This whole movie is way too big to ever be contained into a single movie.
Mm.
And the only problem is, nowadays, people would love to pitch you a whole franchise, you know?
Yeah.
But back then, like in 2006, if you say, I have a whole franchise ready, they're going to be like,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, because like now you've got like Netflix and stuff, haven't you? So it's like, we'll do a whole series on it. Because there's loads of series churned out on Netflix, isn't there?
How the critics felt about this movie pretty much summed it up. So, Southland Tales grossed out of its $17 million budget only $275,000 in the United States box office.
Yeah, that's so low, isn't it?
Yeah. In the UK, only got $374,000. In Turkey, only $100,000. And in some other countries, limited releases. It wasn't going to make its money back. The critical response was about 38% on Rotten Tomatoes, so giving an average of about a 4.6 out of 10. And some of the consensus saying that Southland Tales, while offering an intriguing vision of the future, remains frustratingly incoherent and unpolished. Yep, I can totally agree. People go on to say that Kelly's camera placement and framing are at best textbook and at worst absolutely mediocre. That's kind of scathing. Another reviewer mentioned as well is like, you get the sense that Kelly is too angry to really find any of it funny. It's easy to empathize with his position. Not so easy to remain engrossed in the film that occasionally inspired, but ultimately it's so manic and scattered, it's difficult to find the exact pinpoint of where Kelly has lost his marbles. Wow. Wow. That one's scathing. Ooh.
I can agree, though.
Yeah, no, but this is the thing. I totally agree, but oh my goodness, that hurts. But here's the thing. On a recent article by Empire, in 2020, okay, so I told you Southland Tales appeared on the streaming service Mubi, right? So it appeared there. The director conducted a live watch-along on Twitter, right? And he had some interesting things to say about it. First of all, the film has been given a 4K restoration.
Who wants that?
Not just the theatrical cut, but apparently the original Cannes edit as well. The 158-minute Cannes cut is rough with many unfinished effects, but it will be released for posterity, he says.
Yeah.
So, but here's the thing that I think scares me. He says, but my focus has been on preparing the epic version 3.0 of Southland Tales. Yes, apparently he is trying to do another movie in Southland Tales, as well as do a remake / reboot.
Don't bother, mate.
I know.
This is the problem, you see, because if going back to the comparison of Dune again, obviously, yes. David Lynch hated Dune and hated what happened, and people didn't like the movie. He didn't like the movie. So you just move on. Why doesn't he do that?
Because he actually says, and I quote, in an interview in 2013, he says, again, he still thinks that Southland Tales is one of his most proudest accomplishments, calling it his misunderstood child.
Oh,
so in other
that's
words,
such a shame, because it's not, I don't think.
It's not. It's not. So basically, what he's planning on doing in Southland Tales, the 6-chapter saga, he's planning on directing a new Southland Tale prequel film based on the graphic novels, which is going to be a hybrid of animation and live action. All the stuff that happens in 2008 is all going to be an animated sequence. This includes things like Dwayne The Rock Johnson's character and Sarah Michelle Gellar, etc., right? But then the movie that Dwayne The Rock Johnson was actually going to make, The Power, is going to be a live-action version of that movie. Why? Okay. And he says that eventually he'll hopefully be able to get everyone back in some capacity. He's trying his hardest, almost in a way to tell people, look, I still believe this movie has a lot to say and it's great. But I was thrown to the walls. I had less money. I had less time. I was pushed down by critics calling it shit. It ain't shit. He's almost in denial of it. It ain't shit. And I'm going to prove it to you it ain't shit by making another movie that proves that it isn't shit.
And I'm just going to guess, but I think it'll still be bad. This is my prediction.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile.
Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow-up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Just kicks off with Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Sarah Michelle Gellar are pitching the movie, like you heard, are pitching the movie to this guy who I think may be a producer, but he never explains himself, and I don't know, and I don't technically care. And then and then Sean William Scott comes in, who is working for the left wing. And I'm trying to break this down. It's so hard. But he's brave the West Wing because he wants to frame Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who is a right-wing Republican, and use that as fuel in order to stop the corporation from merging with the Fluid Karma thing and stopping Proposition 69. And you see the rabbit hole. The rabbit hole's getting deeper. I'm really hurting explaining this.
Too many things going on, in my opinion.
There's too many things.
That aren't kind of like all working together that well. So,
yeah, it's like, I think he's, like I say, he mentioned it as a tapestry. Well, it's been sewn very fucking poorly. So,
because as you're thinking back, before the sort of meeting about the screenplay, isn't there that meeting where the guy gets his hand chopped off?
Oh, no, yeah, that happened at some point later on. So later on in the movie, you got this Japanese guy. It's a Japanese guy, isn't it?
Yeah. He actually says he's going to give up a finger, but then he gets his hand chopped off. It's this bit.
You bastard! Use that finger! Not entire hand!
Clearly, your attorneys didn't read the whole contract. 6-inch margin of error in the cutting radius.
So that's kind of just hilarious, but it's
brilliant. It's funny. That bit was funny, and I think I get I can get what they was trying to do. That was all like, oh, satire. So I'll give up a finger for this fantastic new product, this Fluid Karma, where apparently is this alternative fuel where if you use it on certain machines that they're building, you just put it in there, and it will never need to have any more fuel again. It would wipe out the oil industry, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That the whole Fluid Karma people, by the way, are a random mishmash of what the fuckers, right? So you've got the girl, so you've got the older woman from Poltergeist. You have this Asian chick who is just randomly there, and I think she's supposed to be the assassin, but she's not really the assassin.
Yeah,
you've got this older woman, and then you've got the guy running the whole thing, which I believe is, I think it's Wallace Shawn, I believe it is. And that's the thing, is again, he's playing out of character. He sounds comical, but now he's supposed to be this hardened, grizzled, almost Machiavellian supervillain, almost.
Yeah, those guys reminded me of, something from, Demolition Man or something.
Yes! Yes! It totally feels like if they walked out from that movie, because it's so random, because no one else in the movie fits that bill.
Must covering fire from there.
There's also another bit which I also found funny, and it's the first bit I showed you on online. So The Rock, for his movie, he decided to do a ride-along, right? And the ride-along is with Sean William Scott's Copper character, right? And as we kind of suss out that because he's working with the left wing, he's trying to, you know, incriminate him in some way. He's trying to make him look bad. First of all, by trying to say something like racist or do something awful or whatever, right? Mm. So he then goes and starts having this weird-ass conversation talking about the thing. And so he's talking about, and then The Rock starts talking about in the movie, and it's mentioning the idea of that, let me explain a scenario to you. And it's the one with involving baby and bowel movements.
Yeah. In that same scene, you get this as well.
So I'm fucking her last night. Right before I come, I puke all over her tits.
It happens.
It happens.
No, I'm telling you. Nobody, and I mean nobody, rocks a cock like Krista now. Nobody.
Rock the cock?
Nobody.
How many times have you said nobody?
Fucking nobody.
The thing is, Dwayne Johnson is like really funny in this.
Yeah, I think funny, yeah.
When he's being just like comedy Rock, he's really good. It's like, I just don't like the fact when he does the fragile stuff, I don't think it works. But when he's just being funny, it's great.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the thing. This is why the direction's a bit confusing, because there's some of them where he's directing, clearly Richard Kelly's directing these guys to do a comedy, right? But then sometimes you're directing them as being serious in a time where it becomes too funny. Mm. So it's really baffling. Again, he moves on to the bit like babies and bowel movements, which is fucking ridiculous. And then Sean William Scott says, it's like, I haven't taken a bowel movement in 6 days. Not even a piss. I'm just, what is this conversation about? And apparently it's trying to make it feel as if the whole movie is trying to give him sort of things that the stuff that's happening in the script is actually happening right now. It's like a weird Notre Dame kind of thing where Sean William Scott's character is actually the hero of the script in the movie kind of thing. And everything's kind of interlocking and it's backwards and it's kind of all over the shop. So he's having moments where he's doubting himself. And there's one really cool bit before he did this where he's looking in the mirror and his reflection slightly delayed, which is quite cool, actually.
Yeah.
And is basically saying that he's unhinged and he's not real. I get it. Unhinged. But, and so the whole movie is basically playing out. There's moments where Sean William Scott is realizing that something's wrong with him.
About the anti-establishment kind of crew, like
the Marxist crew,
because when they're like sort of when they're introduced, you get like that meeting in that van with that guy selling weapons,
and yet the guy selling weapons is Christopher fucking Lambert.
It's amazing. And you've got this a little foreshadowing of what's going to happen later, but you get introduced to,
you know, there'd be a lot less violence in the world if everyone just got a little more cardio.
Yeah.
Good line.
Hey, is that a bazooka?
It's like, yeah, he's just talking like about like violence, and then you go, oh, actually, no, is that a bazooka? And then he goes on to saying like, he explains exactly what it is. Like, this is a rocket propelled launcher, and he goes, and you could not afford that. He's like, so aggressive.
Yeah, when I first saw it, I realized it was Christopher Lambert. I admit I freaked out. I'm thinking, Christopher Lambert, where have you been? I missed you.
I know, because, I mean, in that scene, she's there just to buy some, like, blanks for, like, the setup that they're going to do later, isn't it? But she's distracted by the fucking bazooka, of course.
Because, obviously, let's not lie, if you saw a bazooka, you said that, is that a bazooka? You want to ask, too, if that's a bazooka. Yeah. Because, of course. And it's interesting because Christopher Lambert's character will be appearing throughout the movie and become a surprising major key in it. Even though he's not like important and he doesn't have a major role, he becomes like an essential part of the final act. But the setup's actually quite interesting. But I did find it funny because you've got like these two sort of performance actors. One's played by Amy Poehler, which I like.
Yeah, the fake domestic you're talking about, aren't you?
So basically the idea is, to just get a bit of context to the scene, Sean William Scott and The Rock are being called as a domestic disturbance and they need to go to visit them. Yeah?
Yeah.
Right? Then another copper arrives, played by, he's famous as all hell. What's his name? John Lovitz, I believe, isn't it? John Lovitz?
I remember most for like things like The Wedding Singer. He's in that, isn't he?
Yeah, but again, he's all comedy and he's playing this. He's playing Bart Bookman, which is what a name. Who's like this corrupted cop. And he's going to say, I think I'm going to go in there with you, you know. More than one, you know, and he's acting like really hard and grizzled. And you're thinking, this is John Lovitz.
Yeah, but because he's doing it like that, it is just hilarious. You can't be.
It's funny.
You can't take that guy seriously. But anyway, the scene.
Yeah.
It literally just sounds like this. I'll play a clip.
Did you fuck him?
Yeah, I fucked him.
Oh.
I fucked him real good.
Oh, do you like it?
I fucking loved it.
You bitch.
I fucking won last night too.
Oh.
So good at improv.
Oh, I fucking hate you.
I fucking hate
don't
you.
Don't marry a hoe.
I wish we never
got married. You can't make one a housewife. You can't. Fuck.
I don't want to be a fucking housewife. I like to suck dick. That's all I like to do.
So they're just, they're basically faking, like, they're just doing the noise, but they're actually standing apart, so they're not actually kind of like having a proper domestic, but it's just like overacting and it's hilarious.
I love how he reacts, because he reacts like, ooh!
Yeah, that's the best bit. They, ooh!
Oh, it's so funny. I fucked your brother too! Ooh! I am so mad!
And basically, they've kind of set it up so, like, they've got, like, squibs on, haven't they? Like,
yeah.
And but like I loved it because so when the what's his name, the guy you were just talking about,
Bart Bookerman,
yeah, when he comes in and actually to just shoot these guys, there's a massive delay in the squibs going off, isn't there?
Yeah, so it basically, yeah, so he shoots them, the guys think that he shot the blank, and then he shoots the squib.
Yeah,
but there's such a delay between the actual shot and this. It's something. It looks like he's been shot, delayed twice, like a reaction.
Yeah.
So these two guys actually end up dying, like legit dying. And since The Rock's holding a camera this entire time in order to like gain reference, whatever it is, now this is considered to be the incriminating evidence.
Yeah.
So it turns out that the Booker guy, the John Lovitz character, is actually in with the lefties, and this is another over elaborate plot to frame Dwayne The Rock Johnson, because he thought that this, the first one wouldn't work out properly because you heard their acting. So,
perfect.
Turns out loads of people got the screenplay because the porn star actress, Krista Now, has actually leaked it on the internet for people to read as a form of motivational, like, propaganda almost.
I guess, yeah.
Which leads to one of the funniest scenes in the movie for me, which is he gets in this company, by the way, called US Ident, right, which is sort of a branch of the FBI or the CIA or something along the lines of that, that is in basically now monitors everything. Basically, so it's a massive security thing where they monitor everything, right? Yeah. And it's kind of funny how this is done, because you see, like, there's one bit where, like, the woman in charge, she's sitting on what looks like a basically a Dr. Evil kind of chair, looking at all the screens and saying, go and kill them, and just doing all basically pure blown supervillain shit.
Yeah, definitely. It's like a James Bond villain type kind of situation, isn't it?
Totally. And it leads eventually to killing off some members of the left, which leads to another Sean William Scott thing, which I'll get to in a minute. But one of my favorite bits is when somehow one of the phone operators from that place reads the script, gets so invested that she actually becomes a character in the screenplay, which is Dr. She becomes, yeah, Dr. Marion Card. Yes, I am Dr. Marion Card, or whatever it is. And she calls The Rock because somehow because she works in security like that, she gets her number. She gets his number, calls him, are you Jericho Kane? Which is the character in the movie. It's like, yes. And it's like saying, I have all the information you need, but we need to meet up. And it's like, okay, we'll meet you at the beach. So he goes and meets him at the beach the next day. And you know what scene I'm talking about, yeah?
I've got a clip of her, actually. I've got a clip of the beach. The beach scene.
Yes, please, play it.
If you should succeed, remember me, my love. Remember my name.
I will.
I want to suck your dick.
It's brilliant.
What do you say to that?
I love it. And then as well, I love that, because then afterwards she goes even more bonkers, puts a gun to her head and says, if you do not let me suck your dick right now, I am going to blow my brains out. And then Justin Timberlake sees this and shoots her with his super sniper rifle and just kills her off in one gigantic explosion, almost. Because there was a splatter of blood.
Yeah,
as she gets shot.
Before he does that, he kind of like he spots that Boxer's there, and he goes, "Oh, Boxer Santoro!" Like,
oh, I know this guy. So random. There's a recurring line throughout this entire movie that doesn't really get any context at all, but he's trying to make it sound deep.
I've never considered committing suicide. I'm a pimp. And pimps don't commit suicide.
What a line! What does that even mean? So, the whole point being is, The Rock finally discovers something quite deep. And, okay, I don't think you'll ever recognize this cameo, right? But, the old guy with the beard. Do you know who that is?
No, he looked familiar, but I couldn't place him.
That's Kevin Smith.
What?
That's the film director Kevin Smith under makeup.
What?
Oh, brilliant. Excellent.
It's excellent. He's sitting there going, why? Okay. To the point that I'm not gonna lie, I'm gonna say something here, right? While I was watching this movie and I found out that was him, okay?
Yeah.
I got in some kind of tizzy. Okay? Mm. And so I, on Instagram, because I follow him on Instagram, I sent him a message on Instagram.
Yeah.
I was so confused that this was Kevin Smith that I said this. Hello, Kevin. I messaged you because I need answers.
Please give me the answers.
I'm a huge fan of your work. I love all your films, even the weirder ones like Tusk. They're inspiring and quirky and brilliant. But I'm doing a movie podcast, and another reason why you inspire me, and I watch Southland Tales, and I just found you in it. Well, I couldn't tell after a few. I couldn't tell until a couple of double takes. So all I want to ask you is why, also how, and also please explain the movie to me, because I still can't. Any answers will help me in adding more context to this amazing hot mess. Hope you're staying safe in this time of strange, Johan. I said that to Kevin Smith because I said to myself, I was so shocked that was him. I needed a backstory behind it. I needed a story. And didn't get it.
I would absolutely love it if he does eventually get back to you. I was going to say, you know, before we get, like, because that pimp line, Before we get to that bit in the movie, we've got like the bit about the fourth dimension rift.
Yes. Do you want to talk about that?
We've got this.
Yes, Mr. Santaros. Just like you imagined in your screenplay.
And what did we do once we discovered a rift in the fourth dimension? We launched monkeys into it.
See, the things that stand out to me in this movie, just lines like that, they just make you laugh out loud. It's just like, I love the comedy bits, the intentional comedy bits are gold.
I love it because at the one point, he's just stroking a monkey and just about pushing it into like this gigantic weird ball thing.
The thing is, after he says that line, I don't know whether you heard of it, softly in the sound design, you can actually hear like a little like monkey kind of scream.
So yeah, they find the rift in the fourth dimension. So basically, somewhere during the explosion, during the nuclear war in Texas, and a few other things, there's been a break in the rift in space-time, which allows them to go into the fourth dimension. Now, The Rock has actually already been into the fourth dimension, and the reason why he has amnesia is because he time-traveled 69 minutes into the past when they did this, but it wiped his memory completely while that's happened. And this then leads to the other big twist in the movie, which made me laugh, which basically, the twin brothers are not twin brothers. They are doppelgangers from the future.
Oh, God.
What is this movie? Okay. Right. So,
it's actually been difficult to talk about because it's so baffling.
So, it leads to the point where The Rock is now saying to everyone else and saying, look, we need to get out of this. We need to get out of the super blimp. By the way, they're in a blimp, by the way. They're in the super blimp run by Fluid Karma. So that's a thing. Down on the ground, there's riot and chaos by the left and everything else. And then Sean William Scott meets the other Sean William Scott. They hold hands in the back of a truck and the truck floats.
Yeah, the ice cream truck, Christopher Lambert's truck.
Yes, which was like knocked to the side or something, and then Christopher Lambert gives the bazooka to the hip hop guy and goes and says like, you know, use it, you can miss the target. So the ice cream van floats up with no explanation as to why it's floating up.
And the liquid karma people kind of look out the window and it's like,
well, what the hell is that?
An ice cream truck.
Just like quite casually just say that it's an ice cream truck just floating. And then the hip hop guy is like the druggy guy is like just standing out on top of it with the bazooka.
Ready to shoot down the goddamn blimp. In that time then, in the blimp, you have The Rock who's doing a freeway tango with Sarah Michelle Gellar and Mandy Moore, which clearly is Richard Kelly's fantasy. Because it just comes out of nowhere again.
And that's another kind of like music video kind of esque moment, isn't it? It looks very much like a music video. Because it's got the American flag behind them, hasn't it?
Evacuate the atrium. Move to the rear of the Mega Zeppelin.
No.
Mega Zeppelin.
Everybody, evacuate. Go back to your seats.
Or I kill myself, and I swear to God.
Rod.
Now, Mr. Santeros, put down the gun. You've killed yourself once already. There's no need to be redundant.
Great.
That's a great line. That's a great line, admittedly. This is the thing is, the lines are great, but they're not because they are... I find them too funny in a movie that's like this, but it's great stuff. So he's saying, I will kill myself, and everyone says, and everyone knows, pimps don't commit suicide. So he's threatening to...
But that is like, that moment is a very... that's my favourite sort of imagery in the movie, because that's why I used... when I was advertising that we're doing this on the podcast, I used that image on Instagram, because it's fucking Dwayne Johnson with the American flag behind him with a gun to his head. It's quite a striking image.
It feels a little bit like propaganda, like a propaganda poster, isn't it? Like
definitely.
See that, and you're thinking, it's a very strong image. And I think, not going to lie, there are moments in the movie as a whole with some very obviously striking imagery. And then, finally, sort of end the movie, basically, the two doppelgangers then realize they're holding each other's hands. A giant blinding light comes from the sky, and it clearly seems like the apocalypse is about to happen. And basically, Sean William Scott, who was once a soldier in the same vein as Justin Timberlake was, confesses that he forgives himself for the mistakes he did of war, and finally it ends on him basically saying he was a pimp and pimps don't commit suicide.
Yeah, I've got the last version of that.
And God wiped away the tears from his eyes so the new Messiah could see out to the new Jerusalem. His name was Officer Roland Taverner of Hermosa Beach, California. My best friend.
He sounds so tired.
He is a pimp. And pimps don't commit suicide.
God damn it.
That's the last line of the movie.
That's literally how the movie ends. Nothing's been concluded. Nothing really has been solved. Everything seems very dour, and the movie ends with Sean William Scott being what seems to be the reincarnation of Jesus. And here's the thing, when the big bright blinding light happens and the blimp's about to explode, The Rock puts his arms out in a crucifix, and then on his back there's an image of Jesus being melded onto his shirt out of blood.
It's great.
It's wow, strong imagery. Great, good, but why the fuck is it happening now? Oh my God.
And it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, this that was Southland Tales, the biggest hot mess of a movie I think I have ever reviewed.
Crashometer.
All right, so just to tell you all, the people who haven't listened to us the first time, once again, thank you very much for tolerating us shouting for the last hour and a bit. But basically, the Trashometer is how we grade movies. So there are five settings. First of all is tame. Tame means that it was basically boring. There was nothing really fun about it. It was more dull, right? A tiny bit trashy is where there are some glimmer of moments, but there isn't enough there to really have had a whale of a time, right? Then you have trash, which is the sweet spot. It's the golden goose. It's the perfect little moment there, the perfect nugget. Then you've got too trashy, which is where there are still some great moments, but we're definitely getting frustrated. And then there is torture. And torture means that we hated this experience. It was torturous, and we would never recommend it to anyone. Now, you can kind of suss out from my tone which one I'm going for. But Ed, what would you go for?
I did find it quite torturous. it's high up there. I don't know whether to go with like the high end of too trashy, because there are moments we found very funny, and like I played a lot of them, and like so there is, it's not all like terrible, but the fact that the whole package is so difficult to get through makes it like torture. So maybe either the low end of torture or the high end of too trashy.
I'm going to go with the lower end of torture, because this was an absolute slog to get through. The fact that the movie is confusing, it has so many messages. The fact that, yes, there are some really funny moments, and there are funny moments, but they are small nuggets in the giant polished turd that is Southland Tales. And I'd never want to watch this movie again. I want to burn my copy. I am done with this movie. So yeah, torture it is. This movie was really difficult, right? This was more difficult than the other torture film we covered, which was Street Fighter the Movie. Because with Street Fighter the Movie, it was a disrespect to the source material, to the point that it no longer matched the original source material, right? But at least there was some kind of plot. At least there was something I could follow. At least there's something here. This was far too difficult, and I would never want to go through it again.
So that's interesting, actually, because I think we gave Street Fighter 95%, and you're saying, like, this is like 90% or so, isn't it? So you're actually giving it a lower rating than the Street Fighter, but...
yeah, I'm giving it a lower rating because it's a movie that you have to see it to believe it. It is an experience. It's something that we could not do justice on this podcast because we missed so much. We missed so much just to get to the point of this movie.
Yeah.
And even then, it's not hard to comprehend. So I'm giving it low because I would still tell people to kind of watch it, but I would tell you this right up front, you are not going to like it, and you are going to be sitting there saying it's the one of the worst films you've ever watched. But it's such an oddity that the thing is, it has gained a cult following. There are people who are looking back at this movie now and saying that it's a misunderstood gem. It's something that was too ahead of its time or stuff like that. There is a cult following for this movie. And I can totally understand it because it's so counterculture. But it's also the biggest hot mess I have ever witnessed.
Definitely, definitely. And it deserves that 90% trash, I think.
Totally. There's no denying it. This movie was horrendous. Right, just to sort of wrap up then, thank you guys, everyone. Thank you guys very, very much for joining Ed and I as we go through, went through the best way we can through Southland Tales. We have plenty of other things up in the works, for example.
We're going to start doing like a Saturday morning nostalgia show, aren't we?
I can't wait for that.
Yeah, and we've actually got agreed on a title, haven't we now?
Yeah, it's retro Saturday Rewind, which is really, 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 really a 90s logo. Really.
Just hearing you say it then, I know that it's got to be that title because it just sounds so cool.
And I love it. The idea for the show would be us, maybe if we film a bulk of them, but we do like every Saturday morning, the video will be up ready on Saturday morning for you guys to watch a cartoon or a kids' TV show or some kind of thing we used to watch as kids around that time in the morning. So it would be like cartoons, it would be game shows, it would be some wrestling maybe.
Yeah, and it's basically just because I think it'll work on the channel, because on the main channel there's a lot of nostalgia on there, isn't it? There's a lot of cult films and stuff like that. We've got Cult versus Current. So why not talk about those kind of things, like TV shows and cartoons? That's all nostalgia as well. So yeah, I think it'll work.
That's the thing is, if you are on any of our social medias, drop a comment and say what kind of shows you might want us to watch, because there were so many things, so many cartoons and so many game shows back in the day that maybe some of us might have missed one or the other. So it'd be kind of cool to see something like that come on.
Yeah, because there was certain ones that I talked about with people, and then you know people say, "Oh, I never watched that." So it'd be interesting. What we'll do is we'll put like polls up now and again, and then we've got we're doing a lot on Twitch at the moment with the Enigmatic Play.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot there at the minute. We're doing like every Sunday or so. We are doing like a joint group play every other Tuesday. I'm doing some chill out stuff, which is quite fun. And you might be doing some retro gaming, aren't you?
Yeah, we're going to, because you've got the chill out Tuesday thing now, and I'm going to introduce Throwback Thursday. I think so. I think it'd be great, and I can play like NES games and stuff like that.
Just anything PS2 or lower, isn't it?
Yeah, basically nothing like after PS2. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be fun. That'd be great. And then obviously, we have for the podcast stuff. We've been obviously we've now had a few episodes up. A recent episode that's gone up recently is with the Horror Hangout guys. That was a lot of fun to do.
It's great. I mean, I've listened to. It's weird with that one because it's like a dual release, isn't it? So you can listen to the Horror Hangout version, and you can listen to the Trash Tapes version. And what you're basically getting is you're going to get a little bit different footage on both, aren't you? So if people did want to listen to both, they will get something out of it. It's not like, oh, I'll just pick one and listen to that, because you'll hear basically how we rank the movie on our show, and you'll hear the Horror Hangout guys rank the movie with our system, and vice versa. And you'll also get a different kind of intro as well. So
and the middle bits are kind of like trimmed and cut to match the kind of pacing for the podcast and stuff like that. So you are getting a different experience, and that's quite fun. That was quite a lot of fun to do. But like I said, you can catch us on now. You can catch that and well as anything else on all different kinds of podcasting streaming services. So we're on Buzzsprout, we're on Spotify, we're on Acast, we're on Apple. Well, we're now on Apple Podcasts. We're literally everywhere now, slowly taking over the world. And please, if you do, if you if you'd please subscribe. subscribe, please like, please share episodes, and write a review. If you can write some reviews, I want to start gathering some more reviews if there's any out there, and you will get a shout out on the podcast. So basically, thank you very much for tolerating us going through Southland Tales. I hope we haven't destroyed your minds, and hopefully you will still be alive and ready to tune in next time, where you can keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys next time, and remember, pimps don't commit suicide. See you guys later.
See you guys.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.